Welcome. It's Thursday night and time for Psychic Viewpoint on PsychicAccessTalkRadio.com. Spirituality, psychic development, love and relationships, manifesting prosperity, and more. You now have access to the world's most renowned spiritual teachers, healers, psychics, and mediums as you join us during this transpersonal collective experience. Sponsored by PsychicAccess.com, where all psychics have been interviewed, verified, and accuracy tested, assuring you the highest quality of quality service. And now, on with this week's show.
Hello, my name is Stephen Lewis, and you are listening to the Psychic Viewpoint, sponsored by PsychicAccess.com. I am a professional tarotist and analytic astrologer, and I change people's lives every day with my work, empowering their relationships and their career potential. But it's not just about me. I have some very, very talented psychics with me here tonight. So before we get started, please join me in welcoming my co-hosts. Maureen is on vacation, so we will be seeing her next week. We send her all sorts of good vibrations. But Everly, how are you tonight?
I'm doing very well. Thank you, Stephen.
I'm glad to hear that. Can you please talk a little bit about what you do at Psychic Access?
I could talk about myself all day long.
All right. Awesome.
Yeah. I am an intuitive and empathic reader. I do use tools such as the tarot and a myriad of other things when they're needed, but I mainly listen to spirit. I'm also a medium. And I basically, through most readings, use my empathic and intuitive abilities to really tap into somebody's emotions or, you know, their problems and use spirit as a guide.
Oh, lovely, lovely, awesome. And just to remind everyone, you can find Everly at PsychicAccess.com. I'm here also tonight with Steve. Hello, how are you tonight, Steve?
I'm good, thank you, Stephen. I'm very well.
I'm very happy to hear that, my friend. Can you please tell us what you do at Psychic Access?
Absolutely. Primarily, I'm a psychic medium. As a kid, I could see people in spirit or see them externally as we see each other. And when I got into my teenage years, my early teenage years, I asked spirit to only communicate with me telepathically, and they complied immediately. And so I communicate with spirit telepathically, but as you know, I'm interested in all forms of metaphysics. I do use tarot sometimes, but I'm particularly passionate about astrology because I find that just a wonderful way of understanding the psyche and also accurately predicting when things are most likely to occur.
Ah, outstanding, outstanding. And anybody interested in booking a reading with Steve can find him on PsychicAccess.com. Thank you very much, Steve. We'll definitely be hearing from my co-hosts later on tonight's topic. We have with us Nikki Scully, author, shamanic healer, and priestess of the Egyptian mysteries since 1983. Her first visit to Egypt was with the Grateful Dead. How many of us can say that? She still visits holy lands and mystical places to this day, and she organizes trips to these sites for the enrichment of spiritual seekers. Visit her and check out her her books and the visit trip packages she has at shamanicjourneys.com. And Nikki, are you there? How are you?
I am here, Stephen, and I'm fine, and I'm delighted to be talking to you.
Thank you. Likewise, I have a lot of questions for you tonight. I don't really know much about Spirit Allies, so I hope the questions aren't too tough for you, I should say. But the first thing that confuses me is you mentioned different families of Spirit Allies. Can you elaborate or talk more about these different families of Spirit Allies?
I'm not sure where you found that on my website. I noticed you said you found that on my website. So I wouldn't exactly... It's not how I would usually approach it. But there are so many different forms of spirit allies that you could call them in families. For example, the Egyptian pantheon is my spiritual family because I've been, you know, I've, I, my trip with the Grateful Dead to Egypt was in 1978. But since then, I've led more than 60 trips to Egypt. And so my passion with Egypt really developed along with the relationship that I developed with that pantheon, which is called, in Egypt, it would be called the Netaru of Egypt. And so that would be a family. Whether you would, how you would subset the ascended masters or angels or animal totems or plant spirit allies, by species or perhaps family. They're all family to me because we are one family.
Right. I actually read about, there's a Skype seminar or a web seminar on the topic of power animals, plant spirits, and other spirit allies. And there it referenced various animal totems, plant medicine spirits, and members of various spiritual families. And so that made me think, well, could there be a hierarchy among these among these spiritual allies?
I see where you got it. You got it right from me.
Yes, ma'am. But,
I was
kind
thinking
of family.
I
don't know anything
day.
About this.
Because, well, when I wrote, and that workshop is coming up this month, actually. It's going to be 4 evenings, an hour and a half a piece. And we really have a lot of fun working together on the telephone or Skype or, however you choose to do it. It's a web-based program that we use. And I really enjoy this because since I wrote one of the original books on power animal meditations, it was first published in 1991 as The Golden Cauldron and then added to and renamed Power Animals 10 years later, or Power Animal Meditations. And there's 50 different totems in that book. And so they're all part of my family, too. It's like we are living on this huge organism, and we are part of this organism, and so is all other sentient beings and creatures and even elements themselves. And so wherever there's consciousness, which is pretty much everywhere, every member of the family would have as much invested in the healing of the planet as we do. I know you asked later, why would spirit allies bother with us at all? Mm-hmm. And it's because we're all connected. So if we don't get it together to find solutions to the grave challenges that are now facing us, mostly because of our own behavior, then everybody goes with us. And many, many, many species are going extinct every single day. And it's, yet we think of ourselves as being the most conscious beings on the planet, and yet we've totally forgotten that with that intelligence comes responsibility. With the power that we have comes the responsibility to steward the planet that hosts us and to look after and make sure that nature is held sacred and that the world is harmonious, and we have utterly failed. And the consequences, if we don't get it together, are going to be really dire. And we can't do it alone. We have to recognize and honor the intelligence of all the beings that we share this planet with. Because just like your friend Steve is really into astrology, and I may really be into shamanism or tarot insofar as I have written an oracle. There's many things that I haven't had a chance to learn, and many gifts that I don't have that thankfully you or Steve or somebody else has, or and it might be an animal or a plant. And so we have to open ourselves and realize, as chauvinistic as we might be, that just because the animals don't communicate in our given tongue or whatever languages that we've learned doesn't mean that they don't have intelligence and can't communicate with us. Does that make sense?
Makes a lot of sense, because I mean, think of all the cloudy communication in human relationships. You know, Orson Welles' broadcast of The War of the Worlds springs to mind there. You know, we can't even communicate with each other competently. And you know, my dog, my Cocker Spaniel Max, he teaches me loads of things every single day. Probably the most important thing he's taught me is what it must have been like to raise me when I was young. You know, so the idea that I can learn something from animals is very easy for me to make. Now, what I'm curious to learn more about is the relation, the spiritual behavior and importance of the botanical world. This is a fascinating topic to me.
Oh, that's a fascinating one to me, too. You know, given my history, which you have a clue of, I also happen to own the land in California where the California School of Herbal Studies has been living since the early 80s. And that land came to me through a magical gift of a magical plant that the owner was using at the time to help him figure out what to do with his land. And I have tremendous respect for herbs as healers and for certain herbs for their magical and divine properties. And I noticed that you lived in Peru for a long time and that you found coca, which
yes.
is ubiquitous in, or it was before we started messing with their culture, in Peru. And yet, when it was refined and turned into cocaine, it became this horrendous bane in our and almost every other culture on the planet. And you ask, what should we do about plants that, under malicious human manipulation, unleash toxic and harmful effects on humanity? Should we take it out on the plant or the human? And I really wanted to address that question, so I'll start with that.
Okay.
The coca plant, if you were to look it up botanically, is probably the, if not one of the healthiest plants on the planet. And in those mountains of Peru, Peru has more systems, biosystems, because of the changes in elevation than any other country in the world, I believe. And there are very harsh living conditions. And so the coca plant not only helped them to oxygenate at the higher levels, but it was their currency. It's what held their culture together, because it's also what kept them going and gave them the strength and stamina to live under such harsh conditions. And then along comes the bad boys and turns it into cocaine, and then you get the power and greed, and suddenly the whole culture starts deteriorating because their access becomes limited, it's no longer their currency, and when they're under, you know, receiving aid from countries like the United States, there are stipulations. And we see that all over the world. And so I think my answer is obvious.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's taking out on, is changing the way that we view these botanicals. It's certainly what's going on in this country around marijuana as they discover the amazing ways in which certain aspects of the marijuana plant can help people, heal people, relieve pain. The same thing, of course, is true with the poppy, but heroin is just murderous.
Mm-hmm.
So when we go back to a shamanic way of living in harmony with nature, then those problems, they just don't even exist in that world. And the plants are used in the way that they were naturally meant to be used. And some of them to commune directly with spirit at a level where you, I mean, the meaning of shamanism, a shaman is one who can walk between the worlds, travel into different dimensions to bring back power and healing for their communities. And the source of the word shaman actually came from, the actual tribe is slipping, name is slipping my mind, but it's in Siberia.
Right.
And so throughout the entire world, the indigenous pre-religious meaning dogmatizing of spirit was shamanic in nature. And there were those who were called, and there were those that were recognized. And those that were called were given incredibly, or those who were recognized at birth through astrology or through signs that the tribes and clans and traditional cultures of whatever region you're in knew to recognize, and then there was rigorous training that went with that. Well, when this country and Australia is another really good example, restricted and basically wiped out the indigenous cultures that were there that preceded them, they didn't have anything to replace that knowledge with. I mean, it's still there, and there are those that are trying to hold it together, trying to keep the languages together, and the stories and the dreamtime connections with the land in Australia, and here in this country, struggling to keep their dances and their way of life. But they were starved, they were taken away from their lands, their whole way of life was taken from them, and so it had become much more difficult. So what seems to be happening is people think they're going crazy. But in that Tungus tribe, that's the name of the tribe in Siberia, the calling was you would go crazy. And that would be the sign that if you did not accept your role as shaman, then you would stay crazy. But if you did, then you would be able to serve your community, and that craziness would be transformed into the gifts of the shaman to be able to help their community.
That's very interesting. It seems to me as if there's a difference in the way that we Westerners even perceive nature, because even the most well-intentioned of us, we still tend to look at nature as something that exists to serve us. What kind of planet are we leaving our children? You know, whereas the shaman seems to be more concerned with what sort of children are we leaving to the planet. You know, it's that sort of relationship of nature, not as something to be conquered, but as something to be cooperated with, that I think might unlock the power to heal of the spiritual allies.
Exactly. In some tribal shaman communities, it's the shaman's job to keep the health of the community. And so when somebody gets sick, it's like they have somehow failed in their responsibility. So that's also another way of looking at nature and health quite differently. It's not that way in all shamanic systems, but there are no laws, there's no rules, there's no dogma attached to it. There are rituals and initiations to help people to mark the changes and transformations in their lives, and they are celebrated when they move from being a baby to a child, and from a child to a teenager, and then when the women get their menses, or when the men, become a man. I mean, these are times to be celebrated, and truly some of the religions have, brought the idea through, but they do it much differently than shamanic cultures. Like a bar mitzvah and a ritual of manhood in Africa are going to be two very, very different experiences.
Yes, they are. And I think the Western way of doing things has, like you mentioned the word dogma, and, sometimes I substitute the word bureaucracy for dogma, because dogmatic thinking inevitably leads to paperwork and rules and all of this good stuff.
Institutions.
And the shaman says, no, you can reap the benefit of spiritual alliances with plants and with animals, with nature, and you don't even have to get the state involved. You don't have to get the institution involved. This is a, by doing this, this can be a personal thing, and it'll make you a better thread in the quilt of humanity and all existence. It's a very beautiful, beautiful concept.
And there are countries, including this country, in which certain divine plants, such as peyote here, or ayahuasca in Brazil, or San Pedro in Peru, are legal. They are considered a part of the spiritual culture of the country that keeps it together and harmonious, where, it's certainly helping in the struggle for Native Americans to be able to integrate the old ways in with the new ways. Mm-hmm. And, I was very surprised when I discovered that how they've mixed the old with the new, how in many of the peyote churches, how much they honor Jesus in the same way as in the Santa Daima or other parts of the ayahuasca culture that is so prevalent right now. And so there, it's as though, you know, everywhere you see a church in some of these countries, you know it's built on top of an original natural power place or temple.
Yeah, I can.
It's even true in Egypt. There's in Luxor Temple, there's still a mosque sitting on top of the temple that's still functioning. But they excavated the temple out from under it, so it's still on top of the temple.
You know, there's something archetypal about Egyptian religion, I think, that set its stamp on all of Western the entire Western monotheistic tradition. And what's always fascinated me about Egyptology and Egyptian religion is their veneration of canines and felines. You know, you see dogs and cats in a lot of the hieroglyphs. You know, they associate
Anubis. You're talking about Anubis and Sekhmet and Bast.
Right. These canine deities, and I think they have a funerary role. They're attached to the spirit. I mean, how did the cats and the dogs? These are very important and very common spiritualities. A lot of us have cats and dogs. So I'm hoping, you know, to help people understand how to forge a deeper spiritual alliance between their pet.
I've written two books on through Anubis. The Shamanic Mysteries of Egypt and the Anubis Oracle, which certainly shows that his function was much broader than funerary, although he's known for that because he was the one who knew how to, when they brought back all the pieces of his dead father Osiris, how to do the mummy wrapping.
I see.
But he is many things. He's the psychopomp. He's the opener of the way. He's a teacher and a guide. And in fact, I'm wearing a pendant of him around my neck. He's. I don't go anywhere without honoring him, especially Egypt, because I feel that he's got my back, my front, my sides, my top, and my bottom. And
total protection.
I can rely on that just like if I had a German Shepherd that grew up with me, you know.
Yes, fidelity.
That loyalty and that the depth of that friendship is so great, and it's no different. And with regard to Sekhmet, there's Bast, which is like the kitty, you know, the domestic cat, and then there's Sekhmet, the lioness, and she is very, very prominent right now, and I'm working on a book that will be published in the next year or so on Sekhmet, and she is both the destroyer and the healer, the quintessential healer. And yet, she, you know, when she was quickly, as the myth goes, at a time when the earth was in this level of disrespect, at least, and no longer paying homage or honoring the sun, and remembering how things go together in a balanced and a harmonious way, she was sent to the planet to straighten things out because she's the guardian of Maat. And Maat is truth, justice, balance, harmony, you know, the celestial order of things. And so Sekhmet, who is the feminine face of the sun, has a lioness head and a woman's body. came down in her lioness form, and she took a look at what was happening, and in her fury, which was based in compassion, she was ready to wipe out the whole human race. Because how can we treat each other and the planet and other parts of nature the way we do?
So it was Sekhmet. So, I think Sekhmet is a very good symbol for modern femininity because of its solar nature.
Oh, well, that's certainly a way of looking at it.
I don't think modern femininity has a solar symbol that's quite appropriate to what it means to be successful in the corporate environment, for instance. To compete at a man's game, quote unquote, to use a cliche. I think Sekhmet is a very nice archetype for that sort of feminine approach.
Definitely, if I lived in that world, she would be going with me everywhere. She goes with me everywhere anyway because I'm a healer.
Right. It's very interesting to me because I'm reminded of a little similarity with Hinduism. I'm reminded of the goddess Kali, who also plays a destroyer and also giving birth to the entire, giving birth to nature, a destroyer and a creator all at once. I'm also reminded of my mother, who would to tell me, I brought you into this world and, I can take you out of it. so it's a very interesting blend of energies to me, as shown in Sekhmet.
Well, it's really her time when things get this out of whack. And so she's calling people right and left. I'm going to a consecration of a temple outside of Las Vegas that was dedicated to her. And a beautiful statue had been made for it, and people in the area that come from magical or shamanic or Egyptological backgrounds would go there, and somebody stole their statue recently.
Oh.
It's just outrageous.
Yeah.
And so somebody made a new one, and in August, I think it is, I was invited to come and speak at the public consecration of the new statue. But just the fact that there's so little understanding that people would, the word that comes to mind is pillage, sacred place of that nature that's just out in the desert, not bothering anybody, not even near anything.
Yeah, it's a desecration. It's terrible to treat
definite desecration.
Well, Nikki, we got to take a 1 minute long commercial real quickly, okay. And we will be back in just 1 second. You can find Nikki Scully at shamanicjourneys.com. She has more books that I can even list, a prolific author, and we'll be right back in 1 minute.
A new era in psychic services has begun. Psychicaccess.com. You can connect with our psychic advisors by telephone or chat 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. All of our psychic advisors are interviewed, fully verified, and accuracy tested, assuring you quality service. We're living in some very troubled times right now. More and more, the world's problems are affecting us on a personal level. You don't have to deal with this alone. Our highly accurate psychics, caring advisors, and talented mediums can help with situations you are currently experiencing and can let you know what the future may hold for you. All new customers get a free 6-minute reading. All you have to do is register. Why not visit us now and get a free reading at psychicaccess.com?
All right, we are here with Nikki Scully talking about spirit allies and shamanism and how to get in touch with these spirit allies in a practical way, in a day-to-day type of level. And Nikki, welcome back. This is such a fascinating conversation with you. I'm enjoying it.
Thank you. I'm enjoying it too.
Well, we talked about ancient Egypt and how they would think of our modern pets. One thing that's bothered me a lot is that, you know, going through some of the ancient literature, it seems like a lot of, I mean, Christianity, Judaism, Islam, they care about what goes into my mouth. And I wanted to ask you your opinion, if you think a carnivorous diet is compatible with advanced spirituality.
It hasn't really bothered me.
Thank God.
What you have to remember is, and this is really, a truth, you are what you eat.
Yes.
And so, whether it's the television you watch, or the meat that you buy, or the vegetables that you grow, I mean, the only meat that I'll eat, it has to be grown with care and with love and not caged or mishandled in any way, and it has to be totally organic. Otherwise, right. I have no use for it, because what happens, the more conscious you become, the more you realize that you're not only what you eat, you're also what you say, what you do, and even what you think.
Yes.
And once you realize the power of your thoughts, then you find what it is that you have to do to regulate yourself. So, for example, we were talking about the myth of Sekhmet. What they did to bring her down so that humanity was not completely lost was they mixed up, I think it was 7,000 vats of barley beer. And barley beer was a little different than the beer that we drank today. It had very healthful qualities to it. But they spiked it with, well, you hear different stories, mandrake root, some poppy, some pomegranate juice. They made it look like blood. And the way the myth goes, when she woke up from napping, which she had to do eventually, and she saw all this, what looked like blood pouring around her, that she supposedly started drinking it, thinking it was blood, until she got drunk and then was pacified.
Huh.
Well, there's a few problems with the story as it's been interpreted. First of all, she can distinguish between blood and beer. And second of all, the truth is that was medicine for her. And just like many of the divine plants are medicine for those of us who recognize their power to take you from a place of fear to a place of love. That's why they're doing all these experiments now with PTSD and with terminal cancer.
We still have a lot to learn from the natural world. From the modern pharmaceutical industry, I think, would probably benefit most from hearing our talk tonight, because I think if they could get a little bit more creative, like in a healthy way, you know, not in a strictly technical way.
There was Albert Hofmann. I mean, he was the one that took the bicycle ride and discovered the value of LSD. And he lived to be 100 and, I can't remember, but he became a centenarian, and he's quite celebrated that by those that understood the incredible influence that his particular pharmaceutical had on the planet. and on an entire culture.
Well, you know, you mentioned something kind of scary. You talked about the way that in the beginning of Australia as a legal personality in the modern world, during the beginning, they started sort of erasing Aboriginal culture. And so, you know, what if someone is like, oh my goodness, I would love to be able to reconnect with, you know, this reservoir of Aboriginal knowledge about botanicals, but, you know, where could I turn to? Are there any sources that perhaps resurrect that body of knowledge, that body of Aboriginal knowledge that we can turn to in the modern day?
I haven't been to Australia for some time, but when I was there, I met a man named Burnham Burnham, who was an Aboriginal elder who was very open, and we never talked about psychedelics or anything like that, but we certainly talked about how that culture was, do you recall ever seeing a book called The Mutant Message from Down Under?
No, I've never heard of it, but I like the title.
It was a not very well written, but incredibly fascinating. Had me on the edge of my chair through the whole time I read it, to the point where I called the woman that wrote it, because what she was describing in terms of the healing techniques when she was supposedly kidnapped and taken on walkabout were so similar to the techniques that I was using. And So I told Burnham Burnham about it, and he wanted to connect with her because he wanted to know what tribe this was. Mm-hmm. And so I put them together, and she went to Australia, and she was completely hounded by the government and basically, you know, not, I don't know whether she was formally deported, but she needed to leave there. And her book was selling so fast that she couldn't handle it. So when Harper's came to her, she sold it to them, and they made her write on it that it was fictitious.
Oh.
And which really kind of took the wind out of it. But it doesn't matter. I happen to believe it. Burnham Burnham certainly believed it. And what they were so upset about was that there was an unregistered tribe somewhere out there that they didn't know about that had the full capacity of their ways and managed to get this message to us. And the message ultimately was, you're destroying the world. Stop. You know,
right.
This is how we do it.
It's. I can imagine it's very difficult to piece together all of these from when you consider the entire mass of oppressed Aboriginal peoples in North America, South America, the Western Eastern Hemisphere, Western Hemisphere. When you think about all of that, the local knowledge that's been lost, it seems to be sort of a patchwork type of effort, piecing together knowledge from this geography, you know, this place, this other place. It's going to be very difficult. But let me, I want to ask you this question here. So,
can I speak to that first before you
absolutely
go on?
Sure.
Because you brought up a really important point.
Okay.
It's not that difficult. It's a matter of being present. And it's a matter of being present with your eyes and your ears and your senses and your focus and your consciousness open fully at the heart, so that you can be in communion at any point with any aspect of nature.
Ah, that sounds
and get
difficult.
Guidance. So it's not that hard. It's a matter of realizing the possibility, and if you can't do it for yourself, finding a righteous person to consult with that you trust. And that comes from the gut and the heart. I mean, that level of discrimination sometimes takes a bit of developing, because there are all kinds of people out there exploiting the shamanic traditions, which is why I didn't call my book shamanic healing. I called it alchemical healing. I knew it would reduce the volume of sales, but I was looking for healers. I wasn't looking for wannabes.
Right.
Do you understand the difference?
Yes,
for
you were looking
who
for
are
the
truly
righteous healer.
In service. Because power is a double-edged sword.
Yeah. I want to make sure I'm understanding this correctly. When you talk about the way that I think of myself in relation to nature, is it correct to say that you're advocating trying to merge my consciousness sometimes during meditation with the whatever means, my consciousness with the almost like a nature sort of consciousness or a universal sort of consciousness?
Either or and all, however you choose to look at it. Personally, this is my personal opinion, is that our brains, although they may be wired in such a way for us to understand, we are not either sophisticated enough or in tune enough to understand truly the concept of God. However, God is everywhere. And God is in everything. So when you are speaking, whether it's to your dog or to Anubis, you are speaking to an aspect of God, which can speak the truth from its perspective.
Now my challenge becomes perceiving that truth and understanding that truth from the source's perspective, whether that be a dog or my bonsai tree on my desk or whatever spirit ally I'm trying to communicate with.
I'm not sure I get you.
You say that when we, for example, when I talk to my dog, I'm talking to an aspect of Godhood, and that in order to understand, you know, what that aspect of God says to me in return, then I have to be prepared to translate the language of my dog somehow. That's sort of what I'm trying to ask.
That's correct. So you have to move into a consciousness that's beyond language.
Oh, wow. It sounds that's very hard, trick. But worthwhile.
It's imagination. Take the word imagination.
Okay.
We were always told when things fantastic happened when we were little, it's only your imagination. Like when my daughter came in and told me about, you know, hanging out with a fawn and petting it and, you know, hanging out. Well, some parents would say, oh, that doesn't happen. And then that begins to shut the door on that ability for that kind of communication, because it's not acceptable. Or if a child has premonitions that come true, and they're not always good, and they get punished or somehow made to feel like they're to blame for the consequences of what they saw and spoke, then that's another door shutting.
Yeah. I think the problem is with the phrase, it's just your imagination. The problem is with the word just. You know,
absolutely. Imagination is imagination. We are the magicians that are creating our nation. The problem is that the masses in the collective consciousness are not aware enough to be smart about what they're wishing for or what they're eating.
Well, let me ask you this real fast, Nikki. Let's just suppose that I live in an urban environment like New York City, or a big city environment. It might be hard for me to get out and sort of commune with nature. What are some things I could do to reestablish my bonds with the earth?
Well, I would say a book like Power Animal Meditations, which doesn't just tell you about the gifts of the various animal totems and some plant and mineral allies, it actually gives you journeys, guided visualizations that you can take to put you in touch with, and then you learn how to communicate by practicing those. All my books are like that. Alchemical Healing, a guided, what's the subtitle of it? A Guide to Spiritual, Physical, and Transformational Medicine is self-initiatory. Mm-hmm. You can get that book, and there will be journeys. You can either tape them or have somebody read them to you, or if you're quick enough, you can just get the journey while you're reading it. And then you will have the experience, because, knowledge only gets you so far, but experience. Mm-hmm. When you feel, and it's a matter of awakening all of your inner senses and realizing that although sight is the first that comes to mind for everyone really wants to be a seer, but sight can be elusive, whereas feelings, you can't fake a feeling.
One could do the exercise by narrating it into a voice recorder, for example, and then playing it back while going through this sort of guided experience. Would that work out well, you think?
Yeah. All my books, whether it's the Shamanic Mysteries of Egypt or Planetary Healing, the trilogy that we're talking about is Power Animal Meditations, Alchemical Healing, and Planetary Healing, a guide to... What's Planetary Healing? Spirit Medicine for Global Transformation. That's a trilogy of books. Power Animals is more of a reference book where you have these 50 different allies. And in the process of doing this work, you learn how to connect with anything or anyone you want to. Receive whatever gift that they have that's appropriate. And the first journey, the journey that's in the book, is your introduction to that ally, and they'll show you a particular gift. And some of them are very complex and have many gifts, and others it's just a very specific gift that they want to share. But as with everything, it's all about relationships and building and developing the relationship. Like sitting, you meet the bear, which is one of the most ubiquitous healers on the planet. And then you sit down and have tea with this bear in its cave. And the bear will teach you about a variety of things. Plus, the bear can come in and do psychic surgery, because it has these, claws that, their claws don't come in like cats do, so they have to be very adept.
Right.
I've done very, very delicate and precise eye surgery using bear.
It sounds like a fascinated read, Nikki. I'm going to pick up a copy for myself. Unfortunately, we were about out of time on this interview. I want to thank you very warmly for joining us tonight.
Well, I'm really happy to be here. I've enjoyed talking to you, and I hope that some of your listeners will join me on my Totems Ally, my Spirit Allies class that's coming up very shortly.
That's right. It seems like that's going to be starting on June the 17th from 6 to 7:30 p.m. Pacific time.
Yeah.
And it's going to be Tuesdays and Thursdays, June 17th, 19th, 24 and 26, so you still have time to register for that. I highly recommend it. Also, I highly recommend Planetary Healing, Spirit Medicine for Global Transformation. That definitely is going to be very informative, and I just love the idea of rediscovering all my spirit allies through the animals.
Our online store, Hathor's Mirror, for this trilogy, I think it's, I can't remember whether it's 20 or 30% off, but it's a really good deal.
Awesome.
Those three. So,
well, Nikki, thank you so much for dropping by Psychic Viewpoint tonight. We hope to have you on the show sometime in the future. I'm sure I'll have a lot more questions by then.
Thank you. I look forward to it.
Oh, me too. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay, you can find out more about Nikki Scully at ShamanicJourneys.com, ShamanicJourneys.com. Before we get into the banter, I would like to take a few moments to make some announcements. We want you to stay tuned for the second half of the show. There's still an hour left, so you can get your free on-air reading with our gifted psychics. We will announce the call-in number later, so be sure to have your pen and paper ready. If you couldn't get last week's show, you'll find a recorded archive link to it, as well as archives of all previous shows on PsychicAccessTalkRadio.com under the Archives tab. Please feel free to circulate the archive links and future show details to your friends and family. It's our objective to connect with as many individuals as possible, so please share that link. Be sure to visit PsychicBloggers.com to learn about everything from the paranormal, reincarnation, psychic development. All the how-tos are there, psychicbloggers.com. If you need a reading from the best professional psychics on the net, go to psychicaccess.com, where you'll find the best verified and accuracy-tested psychics, each with his or her own unique gifts. Every psychic on the site has a detailed profile for you to find out more about them. It's an honor working with Doug and Psychic Access because of the high expectations required of each psychic. All of my co-hosts here on PsychicAccessTalkRadio.com work at Psychic Access. So if you'd like a personal reading from any one of us, be sure to visit PsychicAccess.com. We would love to hear from you. Incidentally, site owners and webmasters, you can earn 50 cents per minute on every reading on traffic referred to PsychicAccess.com. For more details, visit PsychicAccess.com/webmasters. If you like the show, invite your friends to join us in the chat room and invite them to listen to the Psychic Viewpoint. There's something here for everybody. So spread the word. We very much appreciate it. Steve, are you there? Calling
yes,
Steve.
I'm here.
Well, we talked about spirit allies tonight and how some of them developed out of the spiritual traditions of Egypt and maybe how we can get in contact with them and a whole lot of topics. What did you think about it all?
I thought it was fascinating. I'm very intrigued by Egypt. I don't know if you remember, but we had a guest called Evans Bowen on the show some time ago, and she talked about Egypt. I think Evans has done a couple of shows with us, but I've seen a picture of her in one of the pyramids, and she was at Sekhmet, a monument to Sekhmet, and she showed me a photograph of herself, and in the photograph, you can see this huge Sekhmet in light. It's like a golden orb, but in the form of Sekhmet, really tall, absolutely incredible. And so I'm very intrigued by Egypt, and you know, we talk about the ancient mysteries and the Egyptian mystery schools. I'd love to travel back in time and just sit and listen for a while. Maybe we were there.
Maybe so. I also am attracted to the spiritual traditions of Egypt. You know, I think there is something about Egyptian religion that proved to be paradigmatic, or, you know, it served to be sort of like a mold for other Western monotheistic traditions like Islam, like Christianity, like Judaism, all of which come after it, after the Egyptian religion. And in that respect, you know, I'm reminded of how planets in a natal chart, you know, can mean a lot of different things. You know, the moon might be a symbol for your wife. It's also going to be a symbol for mom. It's going to be a symbol for, you know, physical appetites. You know, all of these things just compressed into one symbol. And it's like, that's the way I perceive Egyptian religion. All of the world's Western religions, you know, sort of compressed into the theology of ancient Egypt. You know, it definitely merits further study.
Yes, and we don't know the full picture. There are so many interesting discoveries now about Egypt and these ancient cultures, you know, the Great Sphinx and the fact that it's far older than originally thought, and really right. that would have to make us rethink the our understanding of history, our current understanding and incorrect understanding of history. It's absolutely fascinating.
Yes, it is. And not only that, it, aside from teaching us so much about our own religious beliefs today, you know, the symbols themselves are very educational because, you know, when she was talking about Anubis and some of the functions that he performed as psychopomp, as sort of an escort of the soul, I was thinking, man, it seems to me as if, you know, Thoth and Anubis were sort of merged into Mercury, you know, because a lot of Thoth functions are mercurial too.
Well, this is one of the things, one of the areas of astrology that I find most fascinating, the myths. Actually studying the myths and the legends behind the archetypes of the zodiac and the planets. Absolutely incredible. You know, the tales like Goldilocks and the three bears. I almost almost says Goldilocks and the three wise men. Goldilocks and the three wise bears. But these tales carry very important spiritual and metaphysical knowledge. So the baby bear was symbolic for intuition. And so she didn't like the father bear's chair or the father bear's food or the father bear's bed because she didn't like the purely masculine archetype of logic or reason. And she didn't feel comfortable with the mother's chair and food, etc., because she wasn't comfortable with being purely emotional or reactive. And she far preferred the baby bear's belongings because the baby bear is the pure, intuitive, innocent spirit. And the chair that she was sitting on, the baby bear's chair, collapsed because the human body ultimately gives in. So all of these tales are deeply symbolic, and I think that we go through life and we forget all of this. We're not told in school the truth about these things, and it's not necessarily that it's being hidden from us. It's just that generally, as a society or societies, we've forgotten.
Yes, we have. We've put priority on other things, the things that have allowed us to walk on the moon, the things that have allowed us to, you know, successfully wage war against microbes and, you know, invisible killers like epidemics. But at the same time, I think our ability to imagine has paid the price for that.
Oh, for sure.
We have such a terrible attitude about imagination. You know, we think of it as being very low on the hierarchy of important things in life. It's just your imagination. You're only dreaming, only just. Well, you know what? The older I get, the more valuable I realize dreaming is because it gets harder to do.
Yeah, I was upset with my friend this evening, my friend Nancy, because I was asking her about American citizenship and saying, oh, I think I'll go ahead and apply for an American citizenship, but the downside could be that I might get called up into the military if we're in war. And she said, no, you're too old. And I said, well, I'm not too old to be in the military. She said, yeah, they wouldn't call you up, you're too old. I said, well, I'm 39. It's not. She said, yeah, you're too old. I was like, what? So I felt old. I feel old this evening.
thanks for that, Nancy. Appreciate it.
Nancy, Stephen's the same age. We're both old folk.
Now it just occurs to me that I'm getting old too. Wow, I definitely need. But that's fine because, you know, the more I mature, the more I realize I need spirit allies, the more I realize that I can't do it alone. You know, sometimes with life, I feel sort of like a kid who's been forced to ride a roller coaster. You know, you can't get off the ride in the middle of it. You're forced onto this doggone thing and you have to see it through. And so you might as well do the best you can at it, you know. So I feel like I need all the allies I can get.
Yeah, it reminds me of my grandmother saying, Stephen, the spirit doesn't age. It's just the body that ages. So the soul, it doesn't age. We don't feel older. It's just we feel as we get older, the body feels older because it begins to wear. But I said, I'm okay to be in the military as long as I don't have to get dirty. I'll do translation or something, you know, or astrology, military astrology. That would be interesting. Oh, wow.
Don't hold your breath on that one. The military will probably never incorporate an astrology, even though they should.
They did, Stephen. They did in the Second World War. They did. Hitler had an astrologer. No, it wasn't Hitler. It was...
Rudolf Hess had one.
Yes, he did.
Hess.
And the British used astrologers as well. They absolutely did. There's quite a bit of evidence about that. Yeah, I'll dig up the information and send it to you.
That would be very interesting. I would enjoy reading about that because, you know, to accept any sort of alternate spirituality that one is not accustomed to is very difficult. It just goes to show how desperate people were in those times in World War II. You know, they were certainly desperate. But no, I could see you being in the Army. You're disciplined enough for it. And there's plenty of room for intellectual. There are lots of intellectual jobs in the Army.
I know, but they get up really early in the morning, and I don't.
They do get up very early in the morning. You know, so that would be a point of conflict. But maybe they would. You could keep your cats. You have a gazillion cats. How do you relate to your cats?
A whole army.
You have a whole army of cats.
So I did have six, but I don't right now. I have three.
Well, you know then a little bit about feline spirituality, feline ways. You know, how have your cats affected your spirituality, would you say? This is a good question.
I always think, and I always say to clients, that animals are very healing. You know, we all need to feel loved and to love. And there are many people in the world that don't feel that connection, but they often do with their animals. And I just feel an unconditional love from my cats, and I really enjoy the relationship I have with them. I really respect them, and I love seeing them evolve. You know, I love seeing them mature, seeing their behavior progress. And I believe, Stephen, that they are little conscious beings. They're not as conscious as human beings, but they are evolving. And I have one cat in particular. I feel that, you know, he's ready to be in human form sometime soon.
Well, is it possible? Do you think that it's not an inferior or superior degree of consciousness? It's just the style of consciousness that might be different. That in fact, you know, the actual consciousness of the cat could put it on a level much different from us. It doesn't exhibit genius in the way that we, you know, for example, it's not going to write an epic novel tonight.
You don't know. I'm not sure we know exactly what they're doing. Anyway, I can tell you this. Whenever I've gone and dealt with a really problematic spiritual situation, like a poltergeist or you know, a malevolent entity, whenever I've returned home, all of my cats come up to me, and it's as though they're cleansing my energy. I feel that they transmute energy. And if I feel unwell or I feel really tired, I find that they're very healing. Does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense. Being around the animal increases your vitality, your vigor, and your ability to recuperate, if I'm understanding it correctly.
Yeah, but they have this ability to transmute energy, to take negative energy from you and to change that into something more calming, something more beneficial. But I think that we don't have enough respect for animals in the world. Human beings are brutal as a species. We are brutal, and we don't generally treat the animal kingdom with respect. And we have this ignorance about the role that they actually play, because who knows what role all of these different animals and species are playing energetically or even spiritually in the world. We're just selfishly doing our own thing and not really worrying too much about anything else. And, you know, your guest was saying that there are so many species that are becoming extinct each day. We don't have an understanding of the role they play.
That's true. We don't really know how they fit into the overall mosaic, do we? Removing even one species could just disrupt the cohesion of the entire design.
It's true.
You know, and the spiritual consequences of this are profound. You know, we always whine and moan about the potential physical consequences. You know, what's going to happen to us, you know, to our bodies, you know, when once we consume all of the hooved animals, or, you know, once we do this, or once we've soured the ecology and the atmosphere, you know, but we don't often think about, you know, the long-term ramifications of why it is that way to begin with. You know, why such a small species or a seemingly unimportant species was created to begin with. You know, but
it's true.
It's you know, I think a lot of the Eastern philosophies, they have a completely different way of looking at nature entirely. You know, in a lot of Buddhist philosophies and Hindu philosophies, they tend to look at nature as something that grows. You know, whereas in the Western traditions of philosophy, we tend to regard it as something that's built, you know, something that's constructed, something that's created, as opposed to being part of a process of, you know, a natural efflorescence, you know, a natural process of becoming. You know, we think of it as being created. I think this difference in mindsets it should be addressed if we want to make any progress on environmental questions.
You know, everything we say, don't we? Everything's connected. So it can't be acceptable that we allow species to be damaged and to ultimately become extinct. We're killing something of ourselves.
We're killing spirit allies is what we're killing. It almost goes without saying, it's impossible for us to reap the benefits of these very powerful spirit allies if we're disrespecting their temple, you know, and treating it in a selfish way. I think that's important. Too. Of course, on an individual level, you know, we do things to, you know, I guess live ecologically and environmentally, you know, wise and smart lives, you know, but I'm always looking for a way to increase my relationship with my pet, my animal, and, you know, to increase my spiritual alliance with him and to understand. And I meant to ask you if your cats ever articulate, I mean, how you imagine them articulating thoughts to you, you know, their tone of voice, you know, do you ever have conversations with them, for instance, you know, do you ever imagine their replies to you?
I talk to them all of the time. And they do respond. I've got two cats that are particularly talkative, and I've learned to recognize their different cries, their different sounds, and what that means, what it is they're asking for, what it is they have to say. And obviously they're not speaking as we're speaking, but they do speak and they do respond.
It's very interesting. What about and I suppose one.
Sorry, I was going to say to you, Stephen, sorry to interrupt you, but I was going to say something funny. Actually, two of my cats understand Spanish because my two British cats, because when I got them when I lived in the UK, and my partner and I at the time only ever spoke Spanish at home. So I'd raised these two kittens, and all of my interaction with them was in Spanish. And all of the commands were in Spanish, and they still understand things like stop it or stop scratching that. do you want food in Spanish? they're bilingual.
Man, that's really impressive.
Well, it's normal, isn't it? It's normal.
I'm constantly being surprised at the expressiveness and the intelligence of animals. You know, and actually, before we get too deep with this, I want to go ahead and toss out that number for the free on-air readings. So go ahead and get your paper and pen handy. The call-in number for your free reading is 724-444-4851. Again, that number is 724-444-4851. Please be aware that every call is going to automatically be placed on hold, and we will answer it in the order that it's received. So just try to relax and listen to the show and the banter while you wait. When you get on the air, we ask that you're very clear and direct with your question. We can only take one question per person, as this will allow us to take all the rest of the calls that are waiting in the queue. And so there you go. That number is 724-444-4851. Now, Steve, I also wanted to ask you this, if you've ever, and you know, and I suppose this is the next extension of of actually having a spirit ally. If you've ever thought about including your cats on a decision-making process, like, oh, should I assign this contract or no? And if the kitty, well, you know, runs through the kit, you know, the cat litter box and does number one or whatever, then you could say, well, forget that. I'm not going to do this. That's an obvious no.
That's a pissy idea.
Well, have you ever done that? Oh, you wouldn't trust your cats with such a decision.
I don't do that, but I can tell you I adore my cats, and I think they have a wonderful life. And I liked what you said about learning, because I do think we can learn from animals. I learn from them in the sense that they, you know, the way that they relax. I often observe that and think, well, I should relax more. And they're playful, and the one thing you could say about cats is they're quite egotistical. They're very egotistical. It's all about me, isn't it? It is all about me. I'm hungry. I want to go out and play. I caught this. I don't want to interact with you. Put me down. So I think that one of the things we can learn from cats specifically is that we should look after ourselves.
That doesn't mean ignoring others,
but remembering to look after yourself. How can we take care of others if we're not okay ourselves? So that's one of the things that they always remind me of.
I call the shots around here. That's the cat philosophy. So, I mean, you could see on Facebook there's a proliferation of funny cat memes where the cat's, like, you know, behind a sniper rifle, or the cat is, you know, doing something that is just, you know, the cat is bullying, you know, one of the other pets. You know, the cat's doing something really, really aggressive and evil.
That picture you mentioned of the cat with the sniper gun.
Have you seen that?
I actually have that in my objectives document, and it says, Steve, be a sniper, not a scattergun.
I love that picture. I love that picture. Well, before we get off on a tangent about cats and, you know, how disturbing they can be sometimes, Steve, you have a caller from New York.
Wonderful. Thank you. Who's calling from New York?
Yes. Hello.
Hi there. What's your name?
Anne.
Hello, Anne. How are you doing?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm good, Anne. I'm good. Happy to speak to you. How can we help you?
I'm very isolated. I had friends like 10 years ago or something, and like I feel like they abandoned me almost. And I'm very isolated. And I've been trying to find new friends, but I feel like I need to belong to, like, a certain group or community of friends, and I don't know how to look for that.
Okay. Well, you know, I'm looking at some cards for you, Anne, and I can see, firstly, that you have felt very restricted for quite some time. And I can see that you felt, in the not-too-distant past, very hurt, very let down. But, you know, we always have to remember that how you treat me is more often than not about you than it is about me. And how I treat people is about me. It's my choice. So I think that in life, or I know from all the clients I work with, that so often we observe how someone else behaves towards us, and we feel it's all about us. It must be my fault. I'm not good enough. I've done something wrong. And actually, it's not normally the case. Usually it's just to do with the fact that that person is behaving that way. You know, they're a flaky friend, or they let people down. So you've got to try and not take things so personally. I know that you have been trying hard to make contact with people, and having contact with people is really important, as long as that is good contact, you know, good friends. It's better to have a few wonderful friends than to have lots of flighty friends or shallow friendships. But I can see from the cards that you've been making an effort. I feel that you're going to have to try different groups and different activities, different ways of meeting people. And you're not necessarily just going to fall into your right group, the right niche straight away. It's going to take some time. But I see things working out well for you, and I see you belonging to a really great group of friends. I feel in a few months that you will really make some great contacts. But I always say to people, and this is something that my guide said to me, and I often say this to kids if I'm giving a talk to a class or a group of youths, if we could go through life actually playing important roles like friend and coach and cheerleader for ourselves, to ourselves, then life's a lot easier, because we come into the world and we expect, well, firstly, we expect our parents to be these wonderful, wonderful parents, and they're in the world for their own experiences. They're not generally the perfect parents. That's just the way of the world. But if we can go through our lives saying, well, I'm my best friend, I will really support myself, I will really encourage myself, then life is a lot easier. And when we feel that way about ourselves, when we feel good, when we feel positive about who we are, and we feel comfortable in our own skin, then we're resonating a really positive energy, and that makes it far easier to manifest good friendships. So I feel like you need to do some of that. But I feel actually that my guides say to me, the two groups that you would particularly connect with would firstly be a spiritual group or a metaphysical group, and the second seems to be very creative, even artistic. Have you tried, for example, an art group or a metaphysical group?
Well, I am signed up with spiritual groups. I'm part of a museum group. I don't actually like painting or drawing, but I like looking at art and discussing art.
Yeah, and you see, and the way to do it is really don't go to things for the sake of it because you're trying to find friends. Go to the things that you really enjoy, because that's the way you'll meet like-minded people. And get out there and just enjoy yourself in the process. Work on yourself, love yourself, and be your friend to yourself, and you'll find that it just unfolds. So you've got to experiment for a while, but in a few months you'll have some great friends, and I feel good about that. You mustn't look back and allow the fact that a friend let you down or a group of friends weren't so great to you to form your view of yourself. That's just their stuff. That's just their stuff. It's not yours. Look after yourself
So you said that the groups I should explore are spiritual or metaphysical and art groups?
That's what I feel, yes. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't get involved in anything else. Do the things that you feel drawn to, that you enjoy, and you'll find in a few months that you'll have some great friends.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome, Anne. Good luck.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Steve. If you would like a reading from Steve, you can find him at psychicaccess.com. Now, I have a caller from California. Hello, California. How are you?
Hi, I'm good.
I'm glad to hear that. How may I help you tonight?
Yeah, so I was just wondering, I've been talking to this guy on and off, and I was just wondering what you saw for us in the future.
Okay, absolutely. What can she expect from him and this, from herself and this gentleman? What can she expect out of this relationship in the future? Ah, well, month number three is sticking out as a pretty good month. The Five of Cups definitely is a good luck card, for lack of a better word. Now, right now, it's the beginning of June, July, around late summer, August to September, that Five of Cups is looking pretty good. Now, if you're single right now, I think that is actually going to change next month. Now, and I'm not saying that you're going to meet the love of your life, but next month, the reverse Jack of Cups tells me that, they sort of the crude imagery there is a young girl in love. That's one very sort of bald reading or interpretation you could get from that card. As far as I'm concerned, this is an emblem of yourself. It's associated with the sign of Pisces, dreamy and romantic. What this tells me, I deduce here that you're not going to be that way for no reason. There's a guy who's going to make you that way. In fact, the next 4 weeks, I would expect this change to take place for you because of Trump number 20 describing this month. Trump number 20 is called the sarcophagus, and it's a card of it describes an energy of transformation and change. So I would the change in this case, you asked me about, this guy, and so the change would be in your love life. Now, I would expect, again, just from the reversed Jack of Cups, which, you know, speaks to sort of like a girlish type of love, a youthful type of affection and excitement, being dreamy. This is next month, so I would expect things to definitely progress fairly well. In fact, looking at the end here, we have the reverse Queen of Coins, which is the guy. It shows him as being like a Libra type of person, you know, very much oriented toward relating to you on a one-to-one level. You see what I mean? Let's see what he thinks and feels about you, just to sort of verify this. I didn't see anything really out of the way or terrible. I would actually expect the relationship to continue into the future. Yeah, he definitely has a good feeling and a good idea of you. His thoughts towards you are good. However, looking at what he's desiring is kind of strange, because that's shown by the Tower card. So this is the picture of a person who I would expect to start fight somehow in order to get some makeup tenderness afterwards, if that makes sense.
Interesting. We're actually in the midst of a fight right now, and we haven't made up yet, and it's been almost a week.
Yeah, what's happening is that you're paying the price for some mistake that some other girl did in some relationship in the past. You know what I mean? The hanged man shows me the action here, and it's being compensated. It's reversed. The reversed hangman, that means being compensated for past sacrifices. So, in other words, my point with that is that the roots of the conflict might go back from the mists of time before you even knew the guy. However, the Trump number 17 is the star. That's his thoughts. So even though he might not be acting like it, he's, you know, thoughts of healing and reforming, these thoughts are very much on his mind right now. And so, okay, believe it or not, I would expect there to be I wouldn't expect this to be the total end. And for that reason, I would expect the forecast to continue to be pretty good for you. Again, within the next 4 weeks or so, I would expect maybe you guys to bury the hatchet. Next month, beginning of July to beginning of August, you're probably going to be a little dreamy, maybe even a little depressed. You know, I could be misinterpreting the dreaminess with a little bit of depression. The reality of the situation, it'll probably be a little bit of both, in other words. And then the month after that is the Five of Cups. I'm reading this as a very good, positive influence for you. Because beyond that is, again, the reversed Queen of Coins, which is your guy being more of a peacemaker as opposed to someone starting problems. You know what I mean? So
okay.
I would expect things to clear up for you.
Okay, so you think we'll get over this fight then?
Yes, ma'am, I absolutely do think that you guys are going to get over this fight. Now, I don't want to stake my dog and lot on that, but everything I'm seeing here, it might take some time, okay? Give it a couple of weeks, but I would expect things to reverse themselves.
Okay, great.
Okay? All right,
great.
Well,
thank
I appreciate
you.
It.
Yep, bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, thank you very much for that call. Caller from California. I think we have a caller now from Ohio for Steve.
Thank you, Steve.
Yeah,
who's
Jerry.
Calling from Ohio?
Hello.
Hi, who's calling from Ohio?
Sherry.
Hi, Sherry, how are you?
I'm doing just fine.
Good. Sherry, how can I help you?
Well, I want to see what you see for me. Anything, any changes in my life? Or I bought a truck and I'm afraid I'm going to lose it. I don't know if I'm going to be able to afford the payment. And I have a feeling
that
my daughter might be pregnant.
You bought a vehicle, did you say?
Yes.
Okay. So you bought a vehicle and you're not sure if you'll be able to afford the payments.
Yeah,
let's see. I feel that you will, Sherry. I feel that I know you feel unsure right now, but I feel as though your situation at the moment is actually a little better than it was in recent times. So I feel as though at this time your finances particularly a little better than they were over the last few months. But I feel that you will be fine with the vehicle repayment. And actually, what I see in the cards is a gentleman that actually somehow would contribute towards the payments. So I don't feel
My son's been helping me.
Your husband is helping you already.
Yeah, my son.
Oh, your son is, okay.
Yeah,
so you're not on your own in this, and I don't feel that you need to be worried. I feel that you'll be fine. I feel that you need to really let your hair down and enjoy life as much as you can. You're not alone. This gentleman, your son, is somebody that is able to contribute and will contribute. I don't feel that you'll be let down. I feel like you've got to plan your finances carefully. We all should. But I know, I feel like you're going to be okay. The cards show me that you're going to be okay. So I don't worry about it.
Do you feel that my daughter's pregnant? I feel she's pregnant.
I can only take one question from you, to be honest. But what I can say to you is there was a card that appeared in this spread that I laid down for you that does have a child on it. So I hope so. And I wish you lots of luck.
She's only
16. Well, I've got a card that suggests fertility in it, and so she may well be. She may well be.
Okay.
We'll wish you all the best.
Thank
I wish you.
You
lots of luck.
Thank you.
Take care.
All right. Thank you very much for that. You can find Steve Frampton at psychicaccess.com. Now, I have a caller from California. Hello, California.
Hello.
Hi, how are you this evening?
Fine, how are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you. How may I help you?
Hi, I have a question. Things at work have just gotten really kind of strange, and I'm feeling that we're probably under a huge change, and just because people are leaving, and I just want to know what you might be.
Okay. A lot of changes at work, so you want to know what I see. Let's do a forecast, and let's look at the next 6 months just to sort of get a better idea of what's going to happen. What's going to happen? One second while I pick up on this, okay?
Sure.
I can see the changes you're talking about. This is shown by Trump number 14, which is the like an alchemist. It's, you know, it refers to sort of like a mixing or a blending, you know, that's sort of going on right now. It's right off the bat, definitely a big card of change. The next month is shown by Trump number 7, which is the charioteer. Now, this is usually a very positive card. It refers to completeness, completion, completing something and having a victory. And it refers to action as well. I expect it to be a very busy month at your job next month. Because of this completion, whatever is being completed is going to be in the end game, so to speak. And so there's going to be a lot of activity for whatever that means on your job. Now, also the card has to do with honesty as well, which is good for me to know because I see that there's, you know, as far as this is going, there isn't any deception that you have to worry about. And you're asking, you know, this spread is in relation to yourself. And this represents the idea that no matter what changes are going to happen, you're going to sort of come out on top. You know what I mean? It's not going to be so much of an impediment for you. And this will be next month. Going beyond that, I see that I don't think you're going to be very happy with some of the changes that are being made because month 3, which is around the end of summer, is shown by the reversed Knight of Cups. So I'm expecting you to be displeased about something around that time. And then after that, there's another court card. Maybe you're going to be displeased because of somebody new coming by. There's going to be an Aries type of male. It's going to be a male. It's going to be very headstrong, sort of commanding even. I'm thinking maybe a new boss that you don't like. And finally, on the 6th month there, we have the reverse Jack of Swords. It makes me think you're going to be getting a lot of extra work during that month. So that's what the next 6 months or so are looking like. I expect month number 3, which is June, July, July, August, which is August, September. I expect that to be difficult for you. And I expect you to get more work dumped on you from the end of the autumn, end of summer onward, unfortunately.
Okay.
You see, but I don't think it's going to be overall a bad thing for you because of Trump number 7. It's a situation where, you know, okay, I'm going to have a wonderful, wonderful body, but, you know, we're not thinking about all the exercise in the gym that we're doing, the work. So I really do think that even though you might be forced to do things you might not want to do in the long run, I'm convinced that these are going to be in your best interest.
Okay. Okay.
You see? But okay. Yeah, I would expect the changes to continue, and I honestly don't think you're going to be happy with them, especially toward the end of the summer. The king of the fire element makes me think that one of the biggest reasons you're not going to be happy is because you're going to get a new boss or a new coworker, a new competitor maybe. Probably he'll be male. And then I see you as being very ambitious after that, as working very hard. And this is all going into the wintertime as well. So it looks like you're going to be pretty busy at work even for the rest of the summer too. So it's time to batten down the hatches. But you're going to be fine, okay?
Okay, thank you very much.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you for calling, and I hope you have a great evening.
You too.
Okay. You know what? I think we have a call from Massachusetts for Steve.
Hello, who's calling from Massachusetts?
Yeah, hi, this is Steve.
Hello, Steve. Welcome to the show. That makes three Steves or Stevens.
Okay.
Yeah. How are you doing?
My question is, I have worked for different companies for a very long time, yes, and I'm getting sick and tired of working for peanuts. I want to know, do you see me as self-employed in the near future?
Yeah, okay. I feel that you will, Steve. I mean, as soon as you mentioned work, I felt that actually you would do better working for yourself. Stephen and I both use astrology at times in our readings, and we don't do that online because we only have a short period of time with each caller. But there are indicators in a person's chart as to whether they would do better working for themselves or working in an organization. So I feel that you've got lots of experience and you've done well, and I feel that you could do extremely well working for yourself. The cards show me that you're in a relatively good situation now. You've done a good job, and I feel that you're ready. I will say to you, I don't feel like it's something that you should just jump into straight away. I feel like you need to take your time. I feel like you need to do it for the right reasons, and you need to do it with a strong plan. So my guidance to you is you really need to look at what it is you want to do. You really need to create a strong business plan. You need to prepare. You need to really budget and plan your finances thoroughly. And then when the time is right, then you could do extremely well. I feel, in honesty, that it's best for you to take about, well, it feels from what I sense, 9 to 12 months. And, you know, so often we feel, oh, well, I want to take such and such a step. I'm going to take it quickly. But in actual fact, we can build a bridge from where we are now to where we want to be. And that seems to be the right approach for you. I feel that you would work best in some form of consulting or working for yourself, but not necessarily creating an organization and hiring other people. It seems like an independent function or practice that would be right for you, Steve. But as I said, if you plan well, it can work out very well for you. Just don't rush. Take 9-12 months to really get ready for that transition. That's what I see for you.
Yeah, well, I work as a cabinet maker. I work as a furniture maker, so
I don't feel that you're going to change your profession. I feel that what happens with you is that you take the experience and the skills that you've developed, that you have, and you work independently. But I do, again, I don't feel like you should just quit what you're doing now and start from scratch. I feel like you've got to build that bridge. And so that means making contacts, maybe even taking on some work and transitioning gradually. You know, we don't have to stop what we're doing now and start something different tomorrow. We can start to introduce new work and balance the work that we're engaged in right now with our own work that we want to develop for the future, and build a business, start to build your network, a secure business in the pipeline in the future, so that you know you're not just starting alone with a blank sheet of paper. You actually already have business in the pipeline, and so your transition is far more comfortable and better planned. That's what seems right for you. I don't feel you should just resign and say, okay, here I am now, I'm going to get started on my own. That seems too risky. Okay?
Any success in that business?
Say again, sorry?
Any success in that business?
I feel that you'll be successful. Yeah, I do feel that you'll be successful. I feel that you'll work yourself independently for quite some time. But I feel that you will do well. As long as you plan it right and you don't rush. And we wish you the best, Steve. It's exciting to work for yourself. It really is.
I don't want to take one step forward and three backward.
That's why you've got to plan it carefully. You've got to make sure that you've got a strong plan and that you're managing risk. So if you have a strong plan, you have business in the pipeline, etc., you've prepared well, then you will be reducing risk. And I don't feel that you should just jump, go for it without a plan. You've got to really think it through carefully and plan well. Okay?
Okay.
And wish you lots of luck.
Thank you very much. Have a good night.
You're welcome. Thank you, Stephen. Good luck.
Thank you very much for calling. You can find Steve at Psychic Access. And now I have a caller from California. Hello, California.
Hello? Hello?
Hi, how are you?
Hi, good. I have a question. I'm adopted, and I've been thinking like for many years about trying to locate my birth family and starting that process and stuff. But at the same time, like every time I start, I get kind of like a little bit ambivalent. I'm not sure if I should do it. And I was wondering if you have some insight for me about that or advice or.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. What's the best way to go about this? We can ask, should she? And we could, or we could ask, what would happen if she does? Let's go about it. No. Let's just see. Let's do it this way. One second, okay?
Okay.
This is a rather complex question. I want to make sure you get the best possible answer to it. I think one of the important elements of this investigation is shown by the Knight of Swords. And essentially what this is going to say right off the bat is that you have a right to be a little nervous about doing this because it's not going to be easy. For one thing, it's probably going to cost you some money doing record searches and things like that. And even more above and beyond that, the Knight of Swords, it usually represents bad thoughts that people have. You know, so you could be opening up some doors that might be better left shut. You know, that's something to keep in mind. I'm not saying whether you should or should not. I'm trying to prepare you to prepare you for what sort of strength you need before you embark on it. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not going to definitely don't want you to think that it would be easy. It's going to be difficult getting people to talk. And dealing with the information that they tell you. What you have to avoid if you want to be successful at this, I'm assuming that you do, what you have to avoid is any sort of emotional extravagance. If you could, and I know this is going to be difficult, but you want to be aware of sort of like your emotional motivation for doing this. And that's the thing to keep in mind. This isn't a job that is going to be very useful for emotion. This is a job that requires logic and not emotion. And so these are the things that you need to focus on because you're going to probably be spending time in courthouses. You're going to be spending, not courthouses subpoenaed or anything, but in their records department, researching things, do you see? So it's going to require that sort of investigative mentality. So this is a search for origins. The reversed Four of Cups tells me that it's not so much want to connect with mom, but it's also a search for your origins. Where were your precursors from? Who were they? You know, it's not just mom and dad, but it's mom and dad's parents as well, and it's their parents and their, you know, sort of a thread of DNA that we're chasing after here, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so that's the thing to keep in mind. It's going to be an emotional roller coaster for you, but again, the emotional, any depression you might feel is would just be a distraction from the goal. If you can keep that in the forefront of your mind, that it's probably going to cost you some money and that it's going to rile up an emotional hornet's nest, and if you can prepare for those things and are prepared to deal with the consequences of that, then you'll be successful in finding out more about your origins. I see that clearly.
I know, I just keep waiting. It's like I keep waiting for some perfect time where I'm like, okay, I keep waiting for some time where I feel like I'm going to be invulnerable or anything. So it's kind of funny because it's like maybe I've suspected as much, you know?
You're going to have to be perhaps, in order to make any traction on this, you're going to have to be a little bit more aggressive in taking initiative here, because the Trump number two is the priestess. And, you know, this is an energy of science and research. You know, so that means you're going to actually have to take the initiative to go to wherever information is stored, courthouse, library. You know, it's going to be up to you to get the wheels rolling on this. But once you do, you know, it's not going to be something that's going to be cleanly over with in 2 weeks. You know, you're talking about a research project that could take you years.
Yeah.
It could. So, you might as well go ahead and get started on it. If you're prepared to deal with the expense of it, and if you're prepared to deal with any emotional disturbances that are inevitably going to come from it, okay?
Okay.
All right, I wish you lots of luck on that, and all the best. I'm convinced that it'll yield good fruit for you. I'm confident about that.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, ma'am, thank you. Okay, we have a caller for Steve from California.
I was chatting away there to California with my mic on mute. Who's calling from California, and why can't you answer me when I'm on mute?
This is Reggie.
Hey, Reggie, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good.
Good, Reggie. What's your question? How can we help?
It's what you see for me in the next few months.
I see, Reggie. Let's see. Well, Reggie, you know, I feel, when I look at your situation, I don't feel as though you've been at your best in the last few months. I don't see you feeling great recently. It hasn't been the best time for you. And I feel at the moment that you're having to almost release a situation, let go of a situation, step away from a situation that has been troubling for you. But I feel that as you do that, you're sailing towards calmer waters, and I do feel that your situation improves, and I feel that your stress levels decrease. So I feel that you've been let down, a little disappointed, Reggie. But I feel that if you stand tall, if you look after yourself, you'll be fine. I do see in the near future a person. It seems like a guy who helps you out. I feel as though he's a little bit like a mentor, in the sense that he's able to offer you good advice about your path forward, about things that have occurred, and to help you get on the path you want to be on. Again, with you, I feel that it's important that you plan well. You really need to define what it is you want to go after. I feel with you, Reggie, that although this is not necessarily the area of life that caused you upset, I do feel as though potentially there's a change in your career, your work, your business situation in the not too distant future, a few months out from now. And I feel like you've got to reflect on that area of life, because it seems to me that the best way forward for you generally is to create a really strong plan for yourself in your work, your business, your career. And if you do that, if you also take the advice of this gentleman that's able to help you, I don't feel that you know of him yet. I feel that he comes into the picture in several weeks. But if you take his advice, if you plan well, if you really pursue a good opportunity in your business or your career, I feel that everything else just sort of works out for you, and you won't be you won't have as much to juggle, and I don't feel that you'll be looking back upon some of the things that have troubled you in recent months. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, a little bit, yes. It's a little bit of a hard time, you know, but with my transportation situation, unexpectedly.
Well, it's going to improve. It is going to improve, Reggie. And look out for this gentleman that can help. Again, you're not going to be on your own dealing with the situation or the challenges you've had. Look for him, because he's got great ideas. He's a smart guy, and he's going to offer you good advice, good support, good encouragement. And I, as I said to you, I do feel that life settles down for you, that there are good improvements. You're going to be okay.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
You're welcome, Reggie. Good luck.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Bye, Reggie.
Okay. Thank you very much for that, Steve. You can find Steve at psychicaccess.com. Now, while we wait for some more calls to come in, Steve, why don't we talk some more about your beautiful, beautiful cats? I've seen pictures of your cats. I think you mentioned that you wouldn't entrust them with a contract or a business decision, but I'm curious about other ways that they might guide you. For example,
I was going to say, it may be that they may, given some recent experiences, it may be that they make better decisions than I do.
that's what I'm talking about. I do, but that's what I was going to ask you about. Like, for example, if your partner does your partner have to pass through the cat gauntlet? If the cats don't like the partner, is that a bad sign for the partner? Or
you know what? I tell you this: I did find in a previous relationship the fact that my cats didn't like my partner,
right.
And the fact that my partner was jealous of one of my cats.
Wow.
That definitely was an indication of his character that turned out to be true.
Well, it's pretty bad if you're jealous of an animal, a quadruped. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
that's not a good sign.
I remember him saying, "Whenever I'm here, that cat always comes over and sits by you, and it gets it's like it doesn't want me to be here." What I realized later on was my cat was very well tuned in to character.
Yeah, so your cats, you probably do listen to your cats as far as what they have to say about this or that person.
I think that they're a good judge of they're sensitive. And I have you ever had a dog that really disliked somebody?
You know,
dog that's well natured, but there's one person it really dislikes. There's a reason for that.
Yeah, my cocker spaniel Max. He's got his black list, let's just say, and it includes most of humanity, but that's my fault. he's not so bad, but he definitely is a pretty good judge of character. I like to one thing we talked about in this interview that I thought was important was in learning how to understand the things that my animals and my plants might have to tell me. You know what I mean? Like, I don't take it for granted, first of all, that I'm all that brighter than Max is. And second of all, I don't take it for granted.
Not very bright, let's face it.
Yeah, maybe, compared to Max, I'm a complete dollard. Let me tell you something. Max is brilliant. He's got fine instincts. He's been with me for like 12 years now. And I'm constantly looking for ways that I can understand him better, that I can understand his language, because pretty soon I'm going to get him to start helping me with lottery tickets here. I'm gonna get him to start helping me choose lottery tickets. No, I'm just kidding. But
it would be nice to win the lottery. Remember us.
I don't know if it would. See, I'd much rather have something, lottery worthy on the inside. And plus, I've read about some of these people who win the lottery. A lot of them don't come to a good end.
I know. Most people lose it because they're not in the right state. They're not in the right frame of mind to maintain that wealth.
It's like putting a sapphire in a sow's nose. It's like putting a diamond ring in the snout of a pig. In other words, you can't go from having a provincial mindset to having a millionaire's mindset overnight. You know, the mindset of poverty or whatever, of normality, better said, that mindset is still there, you know. But, hey, after saying all that, I still would not turn down winning the Mega Millions. I mean, let's just put it that way.
Yeah. I mean, if it's too burdensome, I'll help you out with it.
All right. You know, well, as much as I'd love to talk about the lottery, I actually have a caller from Minnesota. Minnesota, hello.
Hey, Stephen, how are you?
I'm doing very well. I hope you are, too.
Well, I'm not so sure. I want you to tell me if I am. I have just recently been sensing some very negative feelings that I'm not sure are coming from me, but maybe from somebody else.
Okay, well, let's pick up on your situation and see if maybe we can find a source of some of that negativity in your life, okay? This is
okay.
I definitely want to nip it in the bud before it becomes a problem. So let's see, just 1 second. Let me pick up on this here. What does she need to know the most? Negativity. I think a lot of us probably have sources of negativity coming, and we would be shocked to know the source. First of all, I would say that the source of the negativity is going to be coming from a female. And the reason I'm judging this is because of a court card that's usually male but is reversed. And so this is going to be a very fiery type of female. Well, when I say fiery, I would expect her to be outgoing. Mm-hmm. Probably the person is jealous of you. Probably is intimidated by you.
Oh.
But the person is not going to tell you this. You'd be absolutely amazed. I mean, jealousy is such a problem that certain religious systems have to, you know, make it a commandment not to engage in it, because it's so natural for people to be jealous. That's why that people go, you know, the churches and everything go out of their way to say, you know, don't envy this person. It's because it's very easy. You know, family members do it to each other, best friends do it to each other. So I would expect the source to be probably somebody that would really, really surprise you if you knew. Now, the reason I'm saying this is not really to encourage you to have a conflict with this person, but if you can, you know, stop outshining the person somehow, if you do some meditation after this and you say, ask yourself honestly, you know, who could this be? Keep in mind, this is not an enemy. I'm not saying this person is an enemy. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying the person is perhaps intimidated by you, or maybe you outshine the person to an extent that it might engender some negativity. I'm convinced it's somebody in your circle, for one thing. And, you know, far be it for me to advise you to, you know, not be as bright as you possibly can, to not shine forth with all of your might. However, if you can shutter your light somehow, even the brightest lamp has to be shuttered. You know, or else to make use of the light. What point is brilliance if it's too bright, if it blinds everyone? You know, that sort of brilliance is of no use to anybody. So that it could be a situation where you might need to tone it down with others. The ten of cups tells me that it's perfectly possible to rehabilitate, you know, any relationships of this nature, because this is further evidence to me that this is not an enemy, so to speak, as it is someone whose feathers you may have just ruffled a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Which is not a big deal. I don't think that's a big deal at all. I think something like that would be easy to fix. You know, I do it with my loved ones all the time. And, you know, sometimes it boils down to not boasting about something good that I did, or, you know, and I don't always do it. A lot of times I mess it up and I still boast, you know, but that's the sort of thing I'm talking about. That's the sort of thing I'm talking about, you know. And if you cut that back, I'm pretty sure you might feel that the energy is being lessened. For sure, the source of it is someone who is having sort of secret bad thoughts about you. And because it's impossible to know for a fact who that person is, the only thing you can practically do is to just do your best to respect the egos of everyone in your environment, and that should be enough to fix the problem.
Sure.
Okay? I really hope that helps you. I appreciate you calling us tonight.
All right. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. You have a good one.
You too.
Okay, Steve, I believe we're getting here at the end. Who's got the show next week? You know, right, Steve?
I do, yes. Next week is Maureen's show. She'll be back with us, and her guest is Dr. Alan Hunter, and he'll be discussing near-death experiences and how we can really draw lessons from near-death experiences. And I think I said to you I had a well, I did pass the spirit. I was resuscitated three times, and it was an incredible experience. So this is going to be a great show for anybody who's interested in the transition to spirit, but also learning from near-death experiences. And really, he's going to talk about gratitude, beauty, innocence, humility, etc. So it's going to be a great show. He's very well qualified. He's actually did his doctoral degree at Oxford in England.
Ah, well, we will definitely – you know what, actually, Steve? We did have one final call slip through the transom here. I want to say it's a call from New York. Actually, we have a call from New York. Would you mind taking that call for
us? Sure, absolutely. Oh, who's calling? Thanks. Who's calling from New York?
Hello?
Hi, what's your name?
Hi, my name's Danielle.
Hello, Danielle. How can we help you?
I have a job interview tomorrow, and I'm wondering how well I will do on it.
Let's see, Danielle. Well, the first thing with you, Danielle, is you really present yourself well. So you always look great, and you're confident, you express yourself well, and I feel as though you're going to do extremely well. Honestly, I don't feel you've got anything to worry about. I do feel like you've got to get your head around the fact that this is going to be a significant change for you. This is a very different role, and so there is a certain amount of change and transition that you'll need to manage. But I feel that they're really going to be very impressed with you. And my guidance to you and what the cards show me is that you really should be yourself, be your true self. You are a wonderful girl. You're very creative. You're confident. You've got good experience. You've really got everything to offer and everything that they're looking for. And you just need to go and be yourself and be calm and be confident and get ready for change. That's pretty clear.
Great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thanks, Danielle.
Bye.
Wonderful. Thank you very much for calling, Danielle. We hope that you'll join us next week. And if any of you listening would like to get a reading from Steve, you can find him at psychicaccess.com. This brings us to the end of yet another wonderful show. Big thanks to Doug C., who works hard behind the scenes, keeps us all on track as our executive producer. Thank you to my co-hosts, Everly and Steve, for joining us. Maureen, our beloved Maureen, is on vacation right now. She's got a much-deserved vacation. We hope that she's having a lovely time down there. Her show is next week. Steve gave us a wonderful description of her guest, so be sure not to miss that. From all of us to all of you, we wish you happiness, health, and prosperity. Have a great week.
Hello, my name is Res Miranda. If you're having relationship, career, or life issues, I'm inviting you to experience what it's like to have access to professional, highly accurate psychics and spiritual advisors you can trust to care and help you. Register now to get your free 6-minute reading by telephone or chat. Get answers. Get access. Psychic access. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. PsychicAccess.com.